My name is Mike Selig, and this is the third episode of The Good Ship Earth, a show that studies the challenges we face and finds the changes we can make so that all passengers on this good ship Earth can live in peace and prosperity. Have you ever wondered why so many people in our country seem to have gone insane? Just one example is the recent Capitol riots. People who called themselves patriots recently stormed the U.S. Capitol. Five people died. Scores of Capitol police were injured. It was probably the most un-American act the people in the mob had ever engaged in. But somehow, they were driven to attack our senators and try and hang the Vice President of the United States. The evidence is clear that a vindictive President Trump would not accept losing the election. Day after day, he used his Twitter account to inject his rage and his lies into his obedient followers. On January 6th, he spoke to the crowd of demonstrators just before they turned into a violent mob and stormed the Capitol building.
And after this, we're going to walk down, and I'll be there with you. We're going to walk down anyone you want, but I think right here we're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. And we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them. Because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong.
After the MAGA mob overran the barriers protecting the Capitol, a retired New York City cop, who had Trump's words ringing in his ears, took the pole of his American flag and repeatedly beat a Capitol police officer. What drives a former officer of the law to see an active duty officer as a threat? You just can't put this down to Trump and his sore loser syndrome. There's something more here, something much deeper and far more dangerous. Here's an example of how deep the delusional disease goes.
Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson raising some eyebrows for comments he made about the rioters who stormed the Capitol on January 6th.
I knew those are people that love this country, that truly respect law enforcement, would never do anything to break a law. And so I wasn't concerned. Now, had the tables been turned, Joe, this could be in trouble. Had the tables been turned and President Trump won the election, and those were tens of thousands of Black Lives Matter and Antifa protesters, I might have been a little concerned.
A Republican senator saw a mob wearing red MAGA hats and waving huge Trump flags attack the Capitol. You might ask why he couldn't admit the truth about what had happened, what he had seen with his very own eyes. But there's a more important question to ask. Did Senator Johnson, in the most politically slimy way possible, simply admit that he's a racist, and he chose to ignore the horror that was the Capitol riot?
The Senate dismantled a reviewing staff and throwing metal poles at us.
Give me yourself, your nose, yourself!
We need some race workers up here now. They're starting to pull the gates down. They're throwing metal poles at us.
We're going to give riot warnings as soon as you are out of here. We're going to give riot warnings. We're going to try to get compliance, but this is now effectively a riot.
1349 hours declaring it a riot.
In the aftermath, there was an opportunity for our country to start healing. For politicians of character to do two things. Make those responsible be held accountable for their actions, and then take measures to make sure that an act of such violent domestic terrorism can never happen again. Only then should we have tried to move on.
There were no racial undertones in my comments.
Or you could just lie about the whole thing and hope there's enough useful idiots out there who will believe you. Here's Senator Johnson's attempt to rewrite history, his attempt to sell the big lie.
A very few didn't share the jovial, friendly, earnest demeanor of the great majority. Some obviously didn't fit in, and he describes four different types of people: plainclothes militants, agents provocateurs, fake Trump protesters, and then disciplined, uniformed column of attackers. I think these are the people that probably planned this.
When you detach from the details of events, you can start to see the pattern of ignoring the facts. You can see the repeating of the big lie. Here are a couple of clips from an Axios News Service interview with Senator Lindsey Graham after the riot. After Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick died in the line of duty, protecting Lindsey Graham's life.
Donald Trump was my friend before the riot, and I'm trying to keep a relationship with him after the riot. I still consider him a friend. What happened was a dark day in American history, and we're going to move forward. So here's what you need to know about me. I want this to continue. I want us to continue the policies that I think will make America strong. I believe the best way for the Republican Party to do that is with Trump, not without Trump. Mitt Romney didn't do it. John McCain didn't do it. There's something about Trump. There's a dark side, and there's some magic there. And what I'm trying to do is just harness the magic.
Lindsey Graham wants us to just move on. Rather than holding Trump accountable for sedition, he wants to harness his magic. We've looked at a couple of examples of how two senators started to sell alternative facts about the Capitol riot. We also heard an angry crowd become infected with rage and driven to deadly violence. After we return from a break, I'm going to share what I've learned about how the big lie was first perfected and who perfected it.
Big thank you to Kraft Cannabis, formerly known as New Vansterdam, for their ongoing support of KXRW Vancouver Radio. Kraft Cannabis is Vancouver's premier cannabis market for those 21 years of age and over. Visit craftcannabis.com to view an order from their full online menu, and they offer in-store, curbside, and touchless pickup to better serve you. Kraft Cannabis is located in the Heights Shopping Center on the corner of Mill Plain and Andreessen Road. Open 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., 365 days a year. More information available at craftcannabis.com.
Community radio like this is brought to you by the generous support by our founding sponsors at ADCO Commercial Printing and Graphics, Clark County's local print shop since 1993. ADCO features stationery, posters, flyers, tickets, business cards, stickers, catalogs, and much more. Print on anything and mail anywhere. Learn more at ADCO1.com. That's ADCO, the number 1.com.
It's hard to explain why people believe in things that can be proven untrue. Thousands of people believe in QAnon theories, but all Q's predictions have turned out to be wrong. The big lie lives because some people desperately need it to. And the sad fact is that today, the big lie is such a large part of our political process. I started to trace back in modern history to find clues of the first large-scale viral infection of untruth. I found a documentary covering what some very powerful people in the early 1900s had done. It describes, and this is a quote, how those in power used psychologist Sigmund Freud's theories to control what they considered were the dangerous masses in an age of strengthening democracy in America. I had to let that one sink in a bit. The fact that 100 years ago the people in control were afraid of a strong democracy as they are today. Here are a series of clips from the documentary The Century of Self by filmmaker Adam Curtis.
When whippoorwill calls.
This episode is about Freud's American nephew, Edward Bernays. Bernays is almost completely unknown today, but his influence on the 20th century was nearly as great as his uncle's. Because Bernays was the first person to take Freud's ideas about human beings and use them to manipulate the masses. He showed American corporations for the first time how they could make people want things they didn't need by linking mass-produced goods to their unconscious desires. Out of this would come a new political idea of how to control the masses. By satisfying people's inner selfish desires, one made them happy and thus docile. It was the start of the all-consuming self, which has come to dominate our world today. Since the end of the 19th century, America had become a mass industrial society, with millions clustered together in the cities. Bernays was determined to find a way to manage and alter the way these new crowds thought and felt. To do this, he turned to the writings of his uncle Sigmund. While in Paris, Bernays had sent his uncle a gift of some Havana cigars. In return, Freud had sent him a copy of his General Introduction to Psychoanalysis. Bernays read it, and the picture of hidden irrational forces inside human beings fascinated him. He wondered whether he might make money by manipulating the unconscious.
Bernays was asked by President Woodrow Wilson to influence an isolationist America to join Europe in fighting World War I. Here's a clip of Bernays speaking about the next steps he took after the war.
When I came back to the United States, I decided that if you could use propaganda for war, you could certainly use it for peace. And propaganda got to be a bad word because of the Germans using it. So what I did was to try to find some other words. So we found the word Council on Public Relations.
Bernays set out to experiment with the minds of the popular classes. His most dramatic experiment was to persuade women to smoke. At that time, there was a taboo against women smoking, and one of his early clients, George Hill, the president of the American Tobacco Corporation, asked Bernays to find a way of breaking it.
He said, we're losing half of our market because men have invoked a taboo against women smoking in public. Can you do anything about that? I said, let me think about it. And then I said, have I your permission to see a psychoanalyst to find out what cigarettes mean to women? He said, what'll it cost? So I called up Dr. Brill, A.A. Brill, who was a leading psychoanalyst in New York at that time.
A.A. Brill was one of the first psychoanalysts in America. And for a large fee, he told Bernays that cigarettes were a symbol of the penis and of male sexual power. He told Bernays that if he could find a way to connect cigarettes with the idea of challenging male power, then women would smoke, because then they would have their own penises. Every year, New York held an Easter Day parade to which thousands came, and Bernays decided to stage an event there. He persuaded a group of rich debutantes to hide cigarettes under their clothes. Then they should join the parade, and at a given signal from him, they were to light up the cigarettes dramatically. Bernays then informed the press that he had heard that a group of suffragettes were preparing to protest by lighting up what they called torches of freedom.
He knew this would be an outcry, and he knew that all of the photographers would be there to capture this moment. And so he was ready with a phrase, which was torches of freedom. And so here you have a symbol, women, young women, debutantes, smoking a cigarette in public with a phrase that means anybody who believes in this kind of equality pretty much has to support them in the ensuing debate about this, because torches of freedom. I mean, what's on all American coins? It's liberty. She's holding up the torch, you see? And so all of this is there together. There's emotion, there's memory, there's a rational phrase even though it's using a lot of emotional elements, it's a phrase that works in a rational sense. All of this is together. And so the next day, this was not just in all of the New York papers, it was across the United States and around the world. And from that point forward, the sale of cigarettes to women began to rise. He had made them socially acceptable with a single symbolic act.
What Bernays had created was the idea that if a woman smoked, it made her more powerful and independent, an idea that still persists today.
Embrace me, my sweet embrace.
It made him realize that it was possible to persuade people to behave irrationally if you link products to their emotional desires and feelings. The idea that smoking actually made women freer was completely irrational, but it made them feel more independent. It meant that irrelevant objects could become powerful emotional symbols of how you wanted to be seen by others.
Bernays had developed techniques that linked people to feelings. Trump used fear and hate to attract violent people to the Capitol and drive more reasonable people to acts of violence. Trump went on to blame innocent people for things that he was responsible for. It seemed that he didn't think of or care about the result.
The surge in hate crimes against Asian Americans only getting worse, and some of the accounts are extremely violent. We've heard about a 52-year-old woman attacked outside a New York City bakery on Tuesday, a 91-year-old man pushed to the ground in San Francisco last month. These are just horrific stories. What else are you hearing?
Yeah, Allison, thanks for having me on to talk about this. One of the incidents, the most disturbing, that really kicked off the social media outrage and the public outrage was the death of 84-year-old Visha Ratanapakti. He was the Thai man in San Francisco who had just gotten his COVID-19 vaccine, just celebrated his birthday, a father, a grandfather, walking on the sidewalk in broad daylight when a surveillance camera captured his attacker crossing the street, shoving him to the ground. He never regained consciousness.
After our next break, I'm going to use an example from our recent past for clues on how to identify the next big lie. And then I'll share what can be done to disarm liars. KXRW is a volunteer-powered, community-supported 501c3 nonprofit organization. The COVID pandemic has prevented us from holding our usual live fundraising events. That's why your support right now is so important. Every donation helps us meet our monthly operational costs. Help us to continue to provide our purpose-driven local talk and music programming by joining KXRW today. You can go to kxrw.fm and click on our merch page for details on how to become a KXRW member. Thank you.
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
That was President George W. Bush being honest. To spot the big lie, look out for the repetition of issues that haven't been verified by credible institutions and people outside the circle of those who are catapulting the propaganda. Bernays taught us that one of the key ingredients of driving consensus isn't education about facts, it's about finding that emotional trigger and pulling it, even if the truth is the opposite of what you've said. Here are a couple of clips that were part of the PR campaign that drove us into the first Gulf War.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Nayira, and I just came out of Kuwait. My sister, with my five-day-old nephew, traveled across the desert to safety. There was no milk available for the baby in Kuwait. They barely escaped when their car was stuck in the desert sand, and help came from Saudi Arabia. I stayed behind and wanted to do something for my country. The second week after invasion, I volunteered at the Al-Adan Hospital with 12 other women who wanted to help as well. I was the youngest volunteer. The other women were from 20 to 30 years old. While I was there, I saw the Iraqi soldiers come into the hospital with guns. They took the babies out of the incubators. Took the incubators and left the children to die on the cold floor. It was horrifying. I could not help but think of my nephew.
That was Nair's testimony to a Congressional Human Rights Caucus. This is what we learned later.
2 weeks after the liberation, it became apparent that the story was a complete hoax.
Lyndon McIntyre exposes the big lie of the Gulf crisis and the massive public relations campaign that whipped up war fever in the United States.
Billions of dollars were handed over to military contractors in the Gulf War. A key factor to remember is if there's a lot of money involved, you're going to have a lot of help selling the big lie.
Good evening, I'm Lyndon McIntyre. A year ago tonight, the United States was just a week away from launching a massive military assault on Iraq. It was to be the culmination of a five-month-long political effort to liberate Kuwait from the iron grip of Saddam Hussein's invasion and occupation. Americans supported the move to war, outraged in no small part by reports of atrocities by Iraqi troops in Kuwait. The Fifth Estate has investigated the most notorious atrocity story, that Saddam's soldiers ripped babies from incubators and left them to die. The identity of a key witness to that story provides a disturbing insight into a multi-million dollar propaganda campaign to sell a war.
Remember to watch out for lazy or complicit news agencies that repeats press releases rather than investigates before it regurgitates.
U.S. Congress held a highly emotional hearing today on atrocities in Kuwait.
Newscasts crackled with the story.
Infants taken from their mothers, and a 15-year-old girl afraid to use her real name in case of reprisals against her family in Kuwait.
They had people on.
The president repeated the incubator story six times in his verbal war against Saddam.
And they had kids in incubators, and they were thrown out of the incubators so that Kuwait could be systematically dismantled.
If a PR campaign is allowed to go unchallenged, it will then reach the wildfire stage. In this case, the U.S. was driven to war by smoke and mirrors and the big lie.
The House easily approved a war resolution. Then it was up to the Senate.
To authorize the use of United States Armed Forces pursuant to United
In the debate, the incubator story came up seven times.
Mr. Dole, aye. Mr. Domenici, aye.
In the end, the war resolution only passed by five votes.
You've just heard how history was bent towards war. There were thousands of people who died. Trillions of tax dollars were wasted. Right now, the events of January 6 are being rewritten by craven politicians who couldn't remain in office if they told the truth. For them, propagating the big lie is their only ticket to their political survival. Now it's time to take a look at a battle that people like Stacey Abrams recently fought and won. The election of Senator Raphael Warnock, the first black senator from Georgia, is the result, and the reason for the right wing to ramp up their war against voting rights. Here's some clips of Senator Warnock's first speech to the Senate. He spoke about the fight to preserve our vote.
Some politicians did not approve of the choice made by the majority of voters in a hard-fought election in which each side got the chance to make its case to the voters. And rather than adjusting their agenda, rather than changing their message, they are busy trying to change the rules. We are witnessing right now a massive and unabashed assault on voting rights, unlike anything we've ever seen since the Jim Crow era. This is Jim Crow in new clothes. Since the January election, some 250 voter suppression bills have been introduced by state legislatures all across the country, from Georgia to Arizona, from New Hampshire to Florida, using the big lie of voter fraud as a pretext for voter suppression. The same big lie that led to a violent insurrection on this very Capitol the day after my election. Within 24 hours, we elected Georgia's first African-American Jewish senator, and hours later, the Capitol was assaulted. We see in just a few precious hours the tension very much alive in the soul of America. And the question before all of us at every moment is, what will we do to push us in the right direction? And so politicians driven by that big lie aim to severely limit and in some cases eliminate automatic and same-day voter registration, mail-in and absentee voting, and early voting and weekend voting. They want to make it easier to purge voters from the voting roll altogether. And as a voting rights activist, I've seen up close just how draconian these measures can be. I hail from a state that purged 200,000 voters from the roll one Saturday night in the middle of the night. We know what's happening here. Some people don't want some people to vote. Make no mistake, this is democracy in reverse. Rather than voters being able to pick the politicians are trying to cherry pick their voters. Politicians in my home state and all across America, in their craven lust for power, have launched a full-fledged assault on voting rights. They are focused on winning at any cost, even the cost of the democracy itself. And I submit that it is the job of each citizen to stand up for the voting rights of every citizen. And it is the job of this body to do all that it can to defend the viability of our democracy. And that's why I am a proud co-sponsor of the For the People Act, which we introduced today. The For the People Act is a major step in the march toward our democratic ideals, making it easier, not harder, for eligible Americans to vote by instituting common sense pro-democracy reforms. And it would end the dominance of big money in our politics and ensure our public servants are there serving the public. Amidst these voter suppression laws and tactics, including partisan and racial gerrymandering, and in a system awash in dark money and the dominance of corporatist interests and politicians who do their bidding, the voices of the American people have been increasingly drowned out and crowded out and squeezed out of their own democracy. We must pass For the People so that the people might have a voice. Your vote is your voice, and your voice is your human dignity.
Senator Warnock and those who are standing up to protect our vote need our support. If you'd like to learn how, the nonprofit Common Cause has put up a website at protectthevote.net. You can learn more about my show, The Good Ship Earth, by going to kxrw.fm/Good Ship Earth. My name is Mike Selig. Thank you for your part in making our planet a safer, healthier, and more democratic place to live. Come.